arbitrator's boasting. They edited it down to 75 pages. They combined it with 25 pages of coverage of the film, reviews, contextualizing essays, interviews, and they came out with a special double edition of Tempo magazine on the 1st of October last year. It sold out immediately. It reprinted. It sold out again. It reprinted. This set the tone for the rest of the media to start really to break their 47-year silence about what happened, to talk about the genocide as a genocide. Killers in Indonesia will no longer boast. At the same time, the country has no illusions about Anwar being the kind of mascot of the genocide. He's been contextualized perhaps as one of 10,000 perpetrators of his level.
Joshua Oppenheimer, director of The Act of Killing, which opens today in New York City at Landmark Sunshine Cinema on Houston, then goes to Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., July 26th, then to theaters nationwide. That does it for our show, Democracy Now!, produced by Mike Berk, Renee Felsar, Mate Nirmin Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkhafani, Masood Rabi, Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Cassandra Lazare, Messiah Rhodes, Tareen Andadura. Special thanks to Julie Crosby and Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Thank you for tuning in today. It's a very, very special show, but aren't they all? Dennis? Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director, is here.
I think they are all special, but then again, I am biased.
Okay. Well, our special guest today, though, is our Henry Ford Community College President, Dr. Stanley Jensen. And I usually see it listed as Stan Jensen. He likes to be a little bit informal.
Sure.
You know, even though he is the guy here that controls everything right now, maybe he's not totally happy about that. And we'll talk about his tenure since May. A few surprises since he was hired and took office, and a few extra challenges than one might expect. It's always a case, I'm sure, of moving in your stuff to the office and then rearranging your files a little. But welcome, Dr. Jensen.
Thank you. Great to be here and appreciate the opportunity to serve this college and be a part of this program this morning. Good to meet both of you.
And for all of our listeners, I mean, spread the word. Dr. Jensen's comments in this hour will be somewhat in-depth and will be available on our website, whfr.fm, as a podcast immediately after the show is done broadcasting. So you can review it whenever you need to and certainly tell your friends. All of our WHFR Journal shows are available that way, they're at our website, whfr.fm. Well, let's begin.
Well, I just wanted to say this is Dr. Jensen, and we are really pleased to have you here. Oh, this is the part where we usually say the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college, but you being here, some of them might be. it's a little bit different disclaimer.
Right. I thought we would start with, since you are new to the community, I'm sure you've been trying to get out and about, and there's so many groups, so many organizations in Dearborn. We're one of those areas that it is known for having a lot of social organizations of all kinds. Even our Dearborn Community Arts Council has over 200 arts groups that it represents in and around the Dearborn area. I know you'll get, acquaint yourself and visit a lot of them in the near future if you haven't already been there. But tell our listeners right now about your background, your education, and your employment experience. Of course, we'll get into how you got to Henry Ford Community College, too. But tell us what you remember most fondly from your background and upbringing.
Well, thank you very much, Jay. And again, great to be here. Yes, I was born and raised in Iowa, so northeast Iowa, and grew up on a farm there. And so it's a terrific upbringing. I'm the middle of five, so I'm a mediator, right? And I can express those kind of strengths, I think. But any rate, grew up on a dairy farm, actually, and so it was 7 days a week and those kind of things. And then when I was 13, we switched over to beef cattle, and so it was a little different pace at that point. But grew up in that situation, and also was very active in school, of course, and sports and those kind of things growing up. And a little bit about my family. My dad was a farmer, of course, but also for 24 years was a state senator, and so very active in state leadership and local leadership. And so I remember those kind of lessons, and those were very much a part of, you know, being a part of the community, being part of leadership, and being a part of giving back to our country and to a state and those kind of things. I went away to college, here in Michigan, actually, Grand Rapids, Michigan, in what is now called Cornerstone University. And so I had a double major, and one of them was in speech. And then I stayed, went across the little pond, is what they call on campus, and I have a Master of Divinity degree, so that takes 95 semester hours, so it's 3 years and to get the master's. And then
that pond was Lake Michigan? Or?
No, it wasn't. It was just literally a little pond.
Oh, it was a pond. Okay.
It was. And
still in the Grand Rapids area.
Yeah, still in the Grand Rapids area. And so then I went to I did a year-long internship in Grand Rapids area, so I spent virtually all the 70s. Probably Dennis wasn't born yet, probably, but I spent.
He is so young.
Yeah, he is young.
Well, I appreciate that, guys. Yeah. Thank you.
In Grand Rapids, and then I went back to Iowa, and I earned my PhD from University of Iowa in History and Philosophy of Education. Wow. And cognates in international studies, which I think will prove really helpful here, as well as in counseling. And so at that point, too, as I was earning that degree, I was also at that point a pastor. So I started a church in eastern Iowa. And then after getting done with my PhD work, I was a dean of students at a small college, and then for about 3 years. And then I went into a career in counseling, and I started, in consulting, and started my own business called Leadership Enterprises. And for 20 years, then I served colleges and universities as a consultant and trainer, and also businesses, and written 3 books and those kind of things.
So Tony Robbins wasn't a role model here for you exactly, was he?
No.
But some people, when they think of motivational teams and speakers, in the days when he was selling tapes on Home Shopping Club and so on, I'm sure he's still around somewhere today. But I knew after he started appearing in certain movies that was probably his downfall. But But there, and of course, your it looks like your most recent book, and you said maybe you're thinking revising and republishing. 30 Keys to Leadership came out in 2002.
Yeah.
And congratulations on Amazon right now. A new copy costs $116 each. So somebody thinks it's worth that much. So that's great.
Good.
Yeah,
yes.
It was a surprise to you.
Originally, it was selling for $16. I only got that much anyhow. So
somebody at the college asked for a free copy from you. You've got to be suspicious. They might turn around and make a fortune off it. But we're looking for the revised edition. It, you know, obviously, there's a lot more than 30 keys, and leadership probably varies. I mean, you have to adapt yourself to the situation, whether it's business or a collegiate, or there are many other social situations too. But here I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you think are the top three keys to a good leader?
Well, I think it is one of them is certainly to have a clear purpose and a clear mission. And they'll sometimes get interchangeably used, which is fine. But you have to know, I think, what you're about, what your strengths are is another thing, and build on those strengths. And for me, at least, a really important part of leadership is to be a servant leader. And so I emphasize that in the book. It's not a brand new concept, and certainly not one that I originated. But it makes sense to me that in my role here, for instance, as a president, that I am here to serve our students and our community and our faculty, our staff, and the two of you. And I serve you by hopefully being an excellent leader as far as clearly articulating what our mission is, what our purpose is, and how we're going to get there through difficult times and good times, and how we're going to win the race is the other thing. I think leaders understand that we are in a race. It doesn't have to be a terrible burden, or it's not that kind of thing, an agony, but nonetheless, the world is moving and at an astounding pace, and so if we're going to win the race, we have to stay on our toes and as a college or as an individual, and constantly adapt, but also going back to fundamentals of leadership. One of them that kind of gets, I'm probably doing four here, which is illegal.
Yeah, I wasn't counting.
But anyhow, that is building teams, because there's only a few things that I do well, and so as we build a team, you too, in fact, do other things that are much, you're better at a lot of those things that I am, and so to build on our strengths and build that team then around, in our case, serving students and serving our community is going to make us an outstanding college. So how to build a team and is a key thing.
If I can comment from my years here, and I was thinking back this morning, and I just realized this morning that I'm probably the longest-serving, active, continuous employee here at Henry Ford Community College since I started in 1968. And one of the things that always most amazes me here is our tradition for collaboration from all levels, from the teachers and the engineers and the secretarial support staff people and the administrators. The only problems with that sometimes is that we set up so many committees and the system had so much potential involvement that, you know, you lose your sight of the goal, which is get an answer before it's too late.
Yeah.
You know? And sometimes all that collaboration, well, sometimes there weren't any answers that were discovered, not even temporary fixes. And sometimes certain issues, I'm talking about 45 years here, folks. Like mostly we had a unique culture here, and not so much in the last couple of years. I have to say that our last president, who we had a lot of favorable discussions on the show with Dr. Mee, but one thing that she did not involve the faculty very much. Your tenure so far has been extremely transparent, if you may use that term, in terms of what you're doing. I appreciate the weekly or biweekly summaries of your administrative meetings and decisions that were made. I know as a department head myself for 10 years back in the 90s, twice a year we had college organization meetings, and then only twice a year do we have department meetings. And the rest of the times, you know, I had to go to meetings, but I wasn't supposed to tell anybody anything. You know, we made decisions internally, and forget about everybody else. We'll tell them in 6 months. We'll get their input in 6 months. Now, the College Senate here is the formal organization. They did have some outreach when invited with the College Senate and College Senate committees, but it wasn't really on a goal-oriented time frame, which is my only criticism of our culture, which I think is a wonderful thing. You know, often, and certainly even in the, as I understand, the Japanese management plan for their auto factories and that, they did respect the employees enough to involve them in decisions from the bottom up. I mean, they still had clear goals and they had to move forward, but they had great respect for the employees from the bottom up, and I think that was important. And it really did help me here. I've always been happy at the college because of that respect and freedom to innovate in a responsible way and propose changes and to work them out to the best results. And so I'm sure you agree that that's kind of an ultimate goal, where whatever kind of organization you're in. But we have that experience in the past, and I think it will take a little more redirection to get us back on it. And I'm right. I'm glad that you've got these leadership principles that come into good stead here.
What you're saying is great. One of the other things I've written a couple leadership books, but the book that has sold the most is my team book, which I wrote about team building. And I built 850 teams through those last 25 years. And these are process improvement teams, similar to the ones that you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. And somebody that I learned a great deal from was Dr. Edwards Deming, which many people have heard of in the car industry because he had a lifetime contract with all the car makers, actually. And he was very famous in Japan after World War II, in fact, right. and also here, and he won the highest award you can win as a civilian in both countries. And but his contributions and what I've worked on is getting frontline people and actually across functional teams that were frontline people, middle management, top management, to work together to solve system problems. And so I do want to say that you're right. Sometimes we committees sometimes are terrific and they need to be, and they're part of every organization and they need to be, but sometimes they become a life sentence that you never get to any kind of conclusions, whereas a team, these teams are designed to not be a life sentence. They have a beginning, they have an end, it's all planned ahead of time, but then the team also is the one who gets empowerment from everybody we need. So our steering committee, if you will, has all the leaders of the unions and also all the cabinet members, and so we have everybody, myself included, are there, and other representatives from staff and so on, so that ideas that come from the team then can get approval rather quickly and the backing, because sometimes, of course, it takes money to get things going. But by tools that I teach them, like Gantt charts and so on, they hold themselves accountable along with everybody else, and they can achieve measurable positive results. And that usually brings over the most skeptical people, say, this really does work. Everybody was involved that needed to be involved, and it doesn't take forever, and there's good follow-through and those kind of things. So we've already done one of those teams so far this summer, and we plan to doing about six or eight more this fall. So,
well, I think those are all on the right track for the issues that are ahead of us here, and we're going to get into more discussion of those, of course. But quickly to finish this segment, can you compare Colorado Mountain College, where you were before, to Henry Ford Community College? Similarities, differences? They have more mountains nearby, but...
They have more mountains. We have a lot more green grass and trees, of course. Both are outstanding institutions. Colorado Mountain College is a rural college. We are quite the opposite of that. It was in western Colorado. It is in western Colorado. It has 12 locations across 12,000 square miles, which is about the size of the state of Maryland, is the size of that. And here, we are one of the largest community colleges in Michigan, but we are the smallest geographically and have three campuses. Mm-hmm. And there they had 12 locations. But, both are outstanding and... I think, both have different strengths, and Colorado Mountain College is about 45 years old. Here we're 75 years old this year, and so there are some differences in those kind of areas, but certainly dedicated people and great people both places.
How did Henry Ford Community College's presidency become known to you, and why did you choose to relocate actually back to Michigan?
Yeah. It became known to me through a friend that was I worked with that person in some of my teams in other colleges. I've worked with about 30 different community colleges through the years, and not just for one day or something like that. Usually we're there 2 to 4 years building teams and those kind of things and doing leadership development and organizational restructuring, those kind of things. And So she actually suggested that I apply, and I did, obviously, and learn more and more about it as we went through that process. I was a finalist, actually, in 5 different colleges or university in one case. And but I'm really happy to be here, and people always ask me, why did you come, knowing that there's some difficulties here and those kind of things.
When did you discover we'll cover this in a second, Brian, but when did you discover the economic difficulty we have? I mean, there was, over the last 6 months, at least, 7 months, faculty has been slowly aware of more and more debt heading into the next fiscal year, which just started, and... you probably heard about it during the interviewing process.
Right.
And so thank you very much for staying in the process.
You didn't run.
Obviously, as you said at the college organization meeting in June, not your fault. You weren't here. Of course, now, as you said at a Board of Trustees member, it is now your fault.
Oh, of course.
Ongoing. I mean, we got to have an answer.
Yes, that's right.
But I guess you did like Michigan when you were here. Of course, Grand Rapids, the west side of the state, is not like the east side of the state, but No. Yes, we're very much green. Did you actually hear about or know the name Henry Ford Community College? People are always saying our national reputation for excellence is out there, but
I didn't know much about the college. I really didn't. That doesn't negate any of your statements at all.
We didn't have a public relations officer for about 5 years.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And I, of course, didn't work here as a consultant or anything like that. But I did work one place, was nearby relatively, and that was at Owens Community College, which is Toledo. Mm-hmm. So it's not too far away.
Too
and,
far. Mm-hmm.
And I'd worked with also a couple of colleges in Michigan. One was Jackson Community College. Worked with them, helping them get their quality efforts underway, and just talked to their president a few days ago. He said, very well remember you helping us get started on that, and he's still there and they're still doing those things. But no, I think, you know, I as you could probably guess, I'm very much a flawed man of faith, but a man of faith nonetheless. Mm-hmm. And so I really base my wife and I based our decision on coming here just as a really strong sense that this is where we should be.
Wow.
And I know that doesn't answer any questions
for
me in one sense or you, but it just is a sense that this, I don't know all the answers of why that would be yet, but hopefully we can contribute. Hopefully we can be, I can be a good servant to this college, and someday it'll become more and more apparent of how I, my skills fit here. I think they do fit here. And to answer briefly, and then I know we need to go on to the next section, is the board was very upfront with, I think, all the candidates, certainly with me, about the financial difficulties from the very first days. So.
Right. Well, that's we'll talk about what those difficulties are in detail, and the suggestions you've already put in place with the help of many of our people on campus, and the future too. There's of course, as people saw in the news this week, we'll talk and towards the end of the hour, of course, about the HFCC millage request, which will be on now the November ballot that was just decided by our Board of Trustees this week. So, brief public service announcement for Guess What Institution, and we'll be right back.
If you want to change the world, then you have to change yourself. One of the best places in the Metro Detroit area to improve your life is Henry Ford Community College. Henry Ford Community College offers dozens of degree and certificate programs, plus the opportunity to network with your peers and potential employers. Taking classes at Henry Ford Community College gives you the freedom to take your own career path and opens up an infinite number of career possibilities. Additionally, day and evening classes allow you the flexibility of building a schedule tailored to your busy lifestyle. So change the world, change yourself at Henry Ford Community College. For more information on admittance and financial aid and class schedules, call the Henry Ford Community College toll-free number at 1-800-585-HFCC. Again, that's 1-800-585-HFCC.
This is the new WHFR Journal with our special interview with HFCC President Dr. Stan Jensen today. And today is July the 19th, 2013, for those that are keeping note. It is the historic discovery in 1799 of the Rosetta Stone, an ultimate way to decode the past and figure out about ancient knowledge, and if anything we need, it's current knowledge and all the information we can get to solve these problems. So the big question, and we got you warmed up now, is how do we get in this mess? The last time I saw it, it was somebody said $16.6 million of deficit was projected, and it was a couple months ago, and we've done some things to actually reduce that, but whoa, what a surprise. I mean, I mentioned I've been here 45 years. We never had a deficit. Good times, bad times, you can imagine. although Detroit was on sort of a boom ride for a lot of those years, the Detroit area, because of the automobile industry, but never had a deficit. So describe, if you will, actually, I love the background and detail you gave on June 18th about the perfect storm that hit our financial situation.
Yes, that's a good way to describe it. There's a lot more than one reason, of course, for where we are today. And just as a synopsis of that, some of it is national trends that have taken place, certainly. And one of those is that community colleges typically, as the economy starts to sour and go badly, people lose their jobs, and so people go back to college. And so community college ranks usually swell in a counter-cyclical way to the economy. So as the economy gets worse, our numbers get better. And of course, the opposite happens when you start to come out of an economic slump. And, of course, that is happening to some degree all over the country in different ways. So that's part of it. Reduction in number of students that we have is certainly a part of it. There also is a national trend. What is called Title IV, and I don't want to bore anybody with it, but return to Title IV monies is a federal program. Basically, in a nutshell, it's the federal government can loan students money, of course, student loan programs and grants and those kind of things. If the student drops out or doesn't pay that back in general, then the college is responsible for paying it back, which is a great gig if you can get it. But it's really a tough one because it puts a lot of stress on not only our college but others. And this has happened in a lot of colleges. But here it happened really dramatically as far as the amount, millions of dollars of bad debt that resulted. And again, I don't villainize our students or anything like that. It's just one of those things that we have to deal with. And then, of course, state funding has recovered a little bit. This year, we are up in state funding about 1.7%, which in our for us means about $300,000, which is we're very thankful for, but in a $100 million budget, it doesn't help a lot, but we're nonetheless thankful for it. So we get about $20 million basically from the state of Michigan. And then, as you mentioned, the other thing is we are partly funded by a mill levy. And right now it's three mills. And basically each mill raises about $3.5 million for the college through property taxes. And, of course, we all know that our houses are not worth what they were in 08. So just a few years ago, we collected a lot more money because property valuations were a lot higher, and today, of course, we don't.
I know my house in Dearborn dropped 50% of its value.
Right. So that means we have 50% drop in our millage.
Probably,
collection.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
And so we had that as a very real crunch on cash flow. And
as you may have heard, the city of Dearborn was able to pass a supplemental millage 2 years ago. And that was because the city council and the mayor made the plea. He said, look, we're not collecting the money we did before. You've been saving on your taxes because, you know, we haven't been paying as much. But, you know, do you want city services or not? So they actually put in place a five-year millage supplement. And they're hoping and praying that the values will come back up enough so that they won't need another one. But they're not coming back up quite as fast as I think originally thought in this area. So if I'm not mistaken here, about 80% or so of our annual budget actually comes from student tuition.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So if we have a decline there, boy, does that hurt. Because that's if we have a 20% decline, then that's 20% of 80%, 16%. Whoa, that's a lot of millions of dollars.
Yes, that's exactly right. And so just to put that in perspective, the bad news and the sobering news is that this summer we are down 38% from a year ago this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
This fall, I track it every day, and on yesterday we were down, as compared to a year ago this date, for fall registration, we're down about 12%. And we're budgeted for being 15% down. I'm not at all sure we'll hit 15% down. It may be much larger. So that's a big crunch on our numbers. And we are, of course, doing lots of things. The first team we worked on was in fact, how to have better customer service for our students. And so there's been 15 different ideas implemented this past Monday, and so those are starting to be a part of things.
And one of those ideas, I noticed it was in the paper, and we've talked about it a couple times on this particular show. The college is putting a program in place to try to recoup some of the money from the bad debt, and it's an amnesty program. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's right. There's an amnesty program we just started on Monday, and it is going well. I talked to the director of that program yesterday as I walked through the Welcome Center and just to encourage our employees and talk to some of our students. She's getting a lot of calls and a lot of emails inquiring about it. And so we don't know how much we'll collect from that, but the basic tenets of the program is it will last from the 15th of July to the 14th of August, and students with outstanding debt to us from winter of 12 and back, history, will be able to clear their debt for 50 cents on the dollar. So amnesty programs are, of course, not new. We didn't think of those things, but I think it is a good service to our students. I asked her yesterday, are some of those students, which we'd hope for, some of those students signing up for classes once they cleared their bill? And then she said yes. And so that's helping.
Very good news.
Yeah, good news on that. And in fact, she said to me, this hasn't been decided. This is a board decision. But just yesterday, I said, well, I think we ought to expand it a little bit, which we've said we won't. So I wouldn't count on that. But see, it's starting to catch on a lot more momentum.
And something that I noticed in the paper that we hadn't reported here is, if somebody doesn't have the full 50% lump sum, the schools would maybe take payments?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah, in a short way. Yep, that's right. So exactly. No, that's exactly right. And so I think it's already started to produce some results, certainly some goodwill. And I think, you know, some who will say, well, they ought to pay it all. 50% of the students that are in a bad debt situation with us have a bad debt of less than $100.
Really?
Yeah. So it's just to get some perspective about it. Mm-hmm. So, but that prevents them from getting transcripts if they want to go someplace or graduating with. They can graduate, actually, go across the stage. You might see them go across if they owe us something, but they don't get their diploma,
right,
which is what you want.
Doesn't it also somehow go on their credit history or at least a certain
credit
point?
Yes, credit history is hurt.
They can't get loans anywhere else? Or?
Exactly. It hurts a lot. And then what happens is the student can't apply for other student loans and those kind of things, and can't re-register for college. Like they can't register with a bad debt. So and that was part of the problem in the last couple of years. We were allowing some of that, and we weren't de-enrolling folks. And so anyhow, that inflated some of our numbers actually artificially as far as how many students were here. But nonetheless, so I think that will help us. Some of those students now will be able to come back. They'll clear up their debt. We have about 1,000 students that owe us, like $4,000. So it's $4,000 or $5,000. But the program is, I think, helpful. It will help to some degree at least.
So I itemized these. Student enrollment downturn, less millage due to decline in property values, bad student debt, the Pell Grants, Title IV you were referring
Title
to?
Title IV.
And we used to have something called, and most businesses do, the city of Dearborn does, although there's not much left, a rainy day fund that is like a 10% reserve.
Yeah.
We don't have any reserves. So one of the questions certainly I'm posed to you in many forums at the college is, where did that go? I mean, isn't that something that our past president and her team supposedly was managing? You know, did that just go poof all of a sudden? I know that we have completed a lot of new buildings on campus. We bought in the Society of Manufacturing Engineers building. Our parking lots had to be redone years ago, but because of environmental concerns by the state of Michigan, they cost $12 million instead of $6 million because doing the right thing to prevent runoffs, protect wetlands, and so on. So in a way, I'm just guessing, because I actually haven't heard, but I didn't go to all the meetings. There just became too much money that was needed to finish off some of these projects, and so apparently Dr. Me and or her advisors here said, well, just take it. Just let's get it done. I mean, I don't know. And you don't have to go into detail. I did think it's important to state, and you did at the beginning of the meeting in June, that as far as we can tell right now, there, nothing criminal happened here. So.
No, that's right. Yeah.
So,
no, that's right.
Okay.
No embezzlements or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, the building situation, I don't know if that's the root of it, but I do think that you're right about the reserves or whatever you want to call it, but the reserve, usually any home or even certainly any business, business this size needs to have reserves. We did have reserves last year. We have spent all those reserves. We have zero reserves today before I got here. And so that's a really difficult situation to be in because it gives you no flexibility. You have to meet the realities of every day. So we did cash flow analysis right away when I got here. I asked for that, and that cash flow analysis revealed that the first one we would have run out of money July 15th, which is this past Monday. So we're still alive, and today the cash flow analysis shows that really we won't go into the negative until now in the middle of December, and then we'll end up $3 or $4 million in debt by the end of the year. But so we've made some progress. We're certainly not out of the woods. The concern I have is really a number of things. One is to get salaries and get what we do at Henry Ford Community College to market levels. We have some areas of the college that are well above market level, and so how to, in relatively short amount of time, hopefully get a more realistic market level. And then the other thing is that we have sustainable budgets, budgets that are sustainable. The third thing is that budgets that have reserves. So as you may well be able to guess, that with a college, our type of college especially, they have basically 3 months out of the year that we're having income. Those are the starts of the three or four semesters, the two big ones. And so we're in those months temporarily have some cash and all, but then you have to be able to make it through the months when you're not having startup of classes, obviously. So that's the problem, not having reserves. One is you don't have the flexibility, and you don't have the ability to float through those months, if you will, with the cash flow. So we are addressing those things. You're right, we did start out when I got here at $16.6 million short for this fiscal year. So that's and with no reserves, that's real hard-nosed cash you've got to come up with. And so we've closed the gap through a number of initiatives already. There's still lots more to do. We have laid off 14 people the 1st of July. And so that will, of course, that's tragic for those families and for those individuals.
These are administrators.
Yes, those are administrators. And and then we'll also, my cabinet took the lead without being prompted to cut their own salaries by about 15%. And and then we we have one cabinet member that is has resigned and is going to pursue other things. It became public knowledge yesterday. So Marge Swan is... had been our controller, and she is going to pursue other interests in higher education, and she will her resignation will be effective August 1st. Mm-hmm. We've already had in the pipeline hiring of a VP of finance, VP of finance. His name is John Setkowski, and comes with a lot of experience in higher education and community colleges. So he started on Wednesday. So there'll be a couple weeks of transition and those kind of things. We are not, at this point, going to replace Marge's position, so that's another savings of a couple $100,000 totally. And and of course, it's adding more responsibilities onto cabinet members with no more pay. No one gets paid anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think we're setting an example of how to, everybody needs to make some sacrifices, and certainly we're looking for that in a number of ways.
Just Looking back, though, I will say that there was apparently some awareness on the part of the administration and an acceptance of the facts from our union, like John McDonald heading up Local 1650 of our full-time teachers union here. And a couple of years ago, I think it was two or three, we had a big contract revision that actually, you know, the it was significant salary decreases. You know, there was cuts for full-time teachers as well as benefit cuts. But I don't think any of us really thought it was going to go this way. But again, with continued millage declines, now really millage is only about 17% of our income, but and student declines with no reserve. Previously, I bet that's why we didn't notice this, because when the ups and downs happen, we still had a reserve we could use for a while without changing the way we were doing business. So obviously, and I know you're going to make the case to the community, We've done a lot already. We'll be making some more initiatives to redirect our funds on campus to save as much money as possible. What we don't want to do, of course, is change the academic excellence we've been known for and just being able to serve as many students as need our education. There's certainly a great need in this area for inexpensive but quality education to get everybody's lives back on track.
And I think you just said something that we hadn't touched on, how inexpensive it is to go to school here. And even though I know there was a recent tuition increase, it's still one of the most affordable higher institutions of learning in the state.
It is. We are second to the lowest in district tuition in the state for community colleges. Mm-hmm. And we are at $75 currently. Per credit hour, the lowest one is $71.40. So we are very great value, and many people save tens of thousands of dollars by starting here and coming here. And so you're right. The other thing, and we do appreciate very much. A couple of years ago, the faculty union did agreed to, I think it was 5% down, then another 2% down coming up this year. Mm-hmm. And before that, though, there was also, just to paint the bigger picture, about that much or a little bit more increase in their pay.
Oh, yeah.
But nonetheless, everybody will need to be a part of the solution, all the way from just turning down the lights when it's not needed and those mm-hmm. kind of things to, I told the humorous story, and of course, if you're a dog lover, maybe it's not humorous anymore. I don't know, but that somebody said, "Well, why do we have dogs, you know, chasing the geese away on campus?" And I said, "Well, I didn't know we did that, you know." And so I'd look into it, and sure enough, we did have some shepherds come on and do a good job actually of doing that, because the geese were tearing things up, and of course they leave deposits and you know those kind of things, and so we don't have shepherds anymore doing that. We cut that expense, and the dogs are upset about it. But you know, we have to do a lot of different things, large and small. And I'm confident that we'll be able to do that. And also, Jay, you mentioned a really important thing, that is to demonstrate to taxpayers, myself included, we're all taxpayers here, that Henry Ford is responsible with their budgets. And so we really will plan toward that much, much more.
And we'll come back with those suggestions with Dr. Stan Jensen here from Henry Ford Community College after this public service announcement, which is a public service announcement. It's for a nonprofit organization that we've been talking about all our Henry Ford Community College. You've heard about the tuition rates. Well, this is your kickstart to the fall semester. Take a listen.
It's that time of year. Time to register at Henry Ford Community College for the 2013 fall semester. Most of the classes that you will take at Henry Ford Community College will transfer to major four-year institutions in the area. Also, HFCC has some of the lowest tuition rates around. First-time students can go to the Welcome Center on campus. Call 800-585-HFCC or go to the web at www.hfcc.edu for more information. Fall semester starts August 22nd, so register today to get the best choice for classes. See you there.
We're here at the new WHFR Journal for July the 19th, 2013, with our full hour interview with HFCC President Stan Jensen. Dr. Jensen, we brought up, of course, some of the initiatives you've taken already in terms of cost cutting, and organizationally here at the college to try to get our surprising deficit back under control. And we're almost there, but I think, what is it, about $4 or $5 million more, which is not a small amount of money that has to be somehow balanced out before the end of this fiscal year, which goes till next June.
Yeah, that's part of the story. There are some assumptions, and so I want to just talk about those a little bit.
Yeah,
and one of them is that we are looking at the possibility, has not been decided yet, but the possibility of differential tuition rates, which means that some programs would have a little bit higher tuition rates than others. For instance, one of them might be the nursing program. We have a two-year waiting list for our nursing candidates to get into the program. We may change that as well to get speed that up. But anyhow, so, you know, that might help us. And we're part of the solution of closing the gap on that 16.6 includes some tuition increases that are probably a differential. We probably will also increase out-of-state tuition. These are, of course, great students and international students in many cases, but they don't pay any taxes to Michigan or to the district. So we want to make sure that they're paying what it costs, basically, so that we're not subsidizing them. So that's some of the things. Another one is we were looking at the bad debt. So we're trying to cut that significantly by about at least one-third in this first year, which is about $4 million. If that happens, great. If that doesn't happen, then, of course, that is an assumption that we missed and didn't complete as much as we wanted to, and that'll affect our budget. Other things, we'll probably try to, at the same time, I know it'll seem contradictory, but we need to spend probably more time, more effort on student service, customer service, if you will, just making it really easy to get into our college and treating our community and our students with even more respect and more efficiencies and those kind of things. So, but also we'll probably trim some things. We've already trimmed a couple of athletic programs, for instance, but we still have 5 athletic teams, and so those. But you know, everything is on the table, as we've said in the meeting. We have also tried to really step up transparency about what's going on. So, as you mentioned early in the broadcast, the idea of having it's a regular update, almost weekly, regular update as needed about what's going on and where are we now and what are some of the answers. So we tried to do that. I met with Faculty Senate a number of times and so on.
I don't know if you're ready for all the email responses to those email updates. Oh, my goodness. I think I counted 30 or 40 to the last number of reorganization ideas having to do with support staff this time. Yeah. Everybody loves their secretaries.
Sure.
And,
they should.
We don't have quite as many, but there's actually some plans afoot to, again, we need those services somehow accomplished nonetheless. And I'm always excited. I always see, I guess it was that old Chinese saying that was attributed to Confucius, but who knows? That was so long ago that out of crisis comes opportunity.
That's right. That's a great point.
Yeah. And that's the way you have to work on it. I mean, you have to come up with answers, but there should be new ways of seeing things, and hopefully, you know, better opportunities there. I also mentioned to you, because of my history, I know we've had several consultants come to the college, well-known national experts, 3 or 4 times in the last 45 years, and it's good that we invited them. They would look at the campus, and we're not talking about the accreditation people, because we got some ideas from them, too, but they would look at the campus, and they'd suggest different ways to reorganize for better efficiency. In fact, financial reorganization was Plant Moran, which is well-known in this area, came in, and I was amazed that almost nothing was implemented from any of those recommendations. Plant Moran, 2 or 3, nothing that had to do with WHFR, though, that we were begging for and made sense, and because the answer was, well, we know best, and the way we're doing it is the way we do it. Of course, anytime there's change, people will complain because things are going to be different and there's going to be issues coming up, too. So I felt over the years as a department head and administrator for a decade or two that we should look at these different ideas, not to you know, lay off people. That's always unfortunate, but to reorganize and redirect for greater efficiencies. And a lot of very respected teams, three or four, okay, I know it's only three or four out of 40 years, but we did almost nothing along the way and still got by really good. I mean, it's still a great institution, or I wouldn't be associated with it, if I may be so bold to bring that up. So, but one of the answers, of course, was a millage increase and even a renewal, because as I understand it, our millage actually only extends to December of 2014, and then we won't have any financing from our local millage, and that would be, of course, a disaster. So, as is typical, we usually start a year early to ask for a renewal. Go through the explanation of why the board chose to recommend 4 mils, which is a 1 mil increase over the 3 mils that we have right now.
Yes. Let me come back to the, you know, I don't know all the different groups I've been through here at all, but I do know one that is we just had a report from. It was arranged for before I got here, but Grant Thornton, and there's five basic actually there's a number, probably about 10 different recommendations. We've already implemented about five of those, and they recognize that. And the other five we'll implement, or else give a reason why it is better to do something else. So that is being paid attention to a great deal. And we've already changed a number of things as far as how students, how the bad debt is looked at, which was their emphasis. And Plant Moran, we've done several of their ideas, actually, and everybody does need, and I have great respect for administrative assistants, and so the misperception, I think, on that one lately was that we were somehow being mean to them. We actually, they knew about it, they were in on it, they were part of it as far as understanding it, and then the union also was in on it and approved it, and really it's driven by union and agreements that we've had. And so actually we changed the job description so it requires you to let anybody look, you know, apply for those things. Mm-hmm. So I suspect that the same people will be back in a lot of those jobs, and we'll have actually only one position not refilled and it's empty right now, so it doesn't affect anybody.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's very important to be careful about the details, and
yeah,
of course,
yeah,
it's easy to be misunderstood and those kind of things. But I have greatest respect for our frontline personnel, and you know, it's always I think you have to look at system changes and organizational changes, which is my background. And so people only can perform about as well as the system in which they are working. So you got to have really smart, really flexible, and intelligent systems. So we're working on that a lot, which brings us back to those teams. Mm-hmm. Let's go to those mill levies.
Yes.
And the mill levy right now is actually two mills that are two types of mills that are two mills that are in place right now. One is for a 1.5 mill, and the other one is for a half mill. And mm-hmm. so they'll both run out at the same time, and you said it right, December of 14. And so we mentioned a little bit earlier, I think, we can all look at our property tax bills. If you go back to 2008, when things were probably pretty high, 2007.
Yeah, that was the high point.
Yep. And actually, you'll be paying, any homeowner will be paying less, even with 4 mils, than they were paying in 08.
Right.
And of course, 1 mil, what does that mean to me? If I have a $100,000 house, it means I'm paying about $100 per year more for that additional mil, which of course is $8 or $9 per month. That's always important, means a lot to everybody. We're all on tight budgets, but actually, you know, if you drink any cappuccino, it's about two cappuccinos a month. And so you, and of course, is higher education and Henry Ford in particular worth that? And I think, of course, I'm biased, and admittedly so, I think so. And mm-hmm. I think we also need to look at how much economic impact that we have as far as job creation. We know that Henry Ford, for every dollar a student spends on tuition, their resulting degree ends up earning them six more dollars for every dollar invested in their lifetime as far as additional pay. So it's a, you know, if you're looking for a lever,
Still, higher education, especially practical education like Henry Ford that gets you a job, is a great investment. And so 6 to 1. So every dollar you invest, you get 6 back. And so that results in more taxes, of course, in one sense being paid, which helps them afford to buy a house, et cetera.
Actually, though, the additional mill to 4 mills that's being proposed in terms of the renewal plus this addition, it actually won't take us back to the money we collected per taxpayer in Dearborn per property in 2008. It's still a little bit less.
Yes.
So we're not even asking for the same amount with that addition. We're asking for a little bit less, and we got our fingers crossed about property values.
Right. Exactly. That's right. It is less. And I think that every taxpayer deserves, I'm one, you are one, to get great return on investment. And I look at a tax as an investment. So if I'm going to pay a road use tax, I want good roads and a bridge that doesn't fall down, of course. And if I'm going to pay to a community college, then I want a great community college, one that sets some records and is high quality.
And you're, you know, in the room right now, myself, my wife and I both came back to school because I think I told you off the air, we lost our jobs in 2008. We came back to school for the back, we're talking 20 years away. And here we are again, and we finished school, and right afterward, we got jobs in the field that we got our degree in, and it was, I'm not going to say we're millionaires, but we're definitely making more money than we were.
And Dennis, your wife completed a program in our health
department, and she works in the health. And it's funny because as she was leaving, she has a degree in that, but she also had some classes in environmental studies, and now she's going off in that direction to learn even more about the things that, you know, that we can combat global warming and things like that. So she learned a new passion by going to school here in addition to her degree. So, I mean, there was so many things came together here for us, and I can't speak highly enough of this college.
Thank you.
Yeah, I you know, the number of degrees and certificates, the diversity of our courses, even within traditional areas, it's amazing. It's amazing the depth of learning, and most of it's transferable, although sometimes it's even like it goes over to, let's say, the junior level of knowledge. And I found in telecommunications, our media writing class will transfer as junior credit for media writing to Central Michigan University, because, well, that happens to be where their class, which is very similar to ours, is offered, and they respect our quality of instruction. And sometimes we use the professor's book that's up at CMU, but that always helps sometimes to get a transfer going. But no, I mean, you look at the number of classes in each area, the specialties, and the areas, like we have alternative energy programs. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the fellow that holds up alternative energy, he felt a little bit stymied. Talk about an idea guy. Maybe you've met him already. I won't mention the name. But while we're doing the parking lots, he said, wait, before you do it, we could put geothermal power plants in every lot, and just the energy from all that heat on all that asphalt could, he thought, of course, there's an upfront cost to put in that stuff, but he thought it could cover like 30%, 20 to 30%, I think he told me. I could have that wrong, apologies. But a significant portion of our energy use each year would be produced free here. Well, again, there's the upfront cost. I don't know what it was. And we don't do things like that at Henry Ford, was the answer. Okay. And also, our director of physical plant at the time, who was not with the college anymore, didn't really understand or appreciate that, you know. Plus, the lots were in such bad repair, we couldn't really wait. I think we were like 6 or 7 years past the time that people could easily drive without getting their wheels lost in big holes in that. So there was, I don't blame the college directly, but there are some great ideas out there.
Well, one of those, it is a great idea, and I certainly, at my previous college, we in fact built 2 solar farms and put in geothermal at every new building, and so we had both the horizontal as well as the vertical geo systems, and some of them were, there's a technical difference between geo and geothermal, but mm-hmm. we had both, and then we had monitors in the building showing how much energy that would save.
No humility here, 5 years ago I proposed solar power for just WHFR. and actually had a plan, and the city of Dearborn was going to give us some money for, it was a combination of wind and solar, because it doesn't always, the sun doesn't always shine in this area, but a little bit of both, and then it was going to happen, but then we were told, well, we've got a bigger plan for the whole campus. Well, I haven't seen that. I don't know where that is. But there was a little bit of jealousy, and this happens with new ideas, in that other people, even in this building, other users here said, well, you can't just have that. If it's going to be on the roof, it should be for all of us. And I agree. It should, you know, but it's going to take some upfront money, but maybe there's a, it's cost effective over time. So I hope everybody can keep their mind open on that. We're just summing up your visit here today. We really do appreciate your time, Dr. Jensen.
While we were talking about the parking lot, Dr. Jensen, just a quick question. With less people, you know, less students here, I see less need, I think, for the shuttle from Fairlane Town Center to here. And I think that might, is that?
Yeah, I think.
It's cut.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Save some money there.
It's a great idea. And we've implemented a lot of ideas, and I we don't have time probably to mention them but a lot of those, and any ideas that people have, they can certainly communicate with me, and be glad to look at those.
Well, we hope to do, you know, the rules of our broadcast here at Henry Ford Community College is we cannot, with this station, even though we're non-commercial and the college owns our license, we cannot actively promote a yes vote on that millage.
That's right.
On the station. But we can do information. Who better knows what we're talking about here? And, of course, I'd be willing to accommodate people that want to speak on any sides of these issues, responsible people. Just get in touch with us, whfr@hfcc.edu. But I think we'd like to have you back on the air as the key spokesperson for the college to further talk about the millage and the new initiatives we took, looking at our situation, say, in late September, October, at least, heading towards this. So we do want to thank you a great deal for coming by today. Friday is a closed day, but not for everybody at the college. I've seen your car in the parking lot, Dr. Jensen, almost every Friday out there. And, of course, our physical plan people are busy getting the campus ready, doing a lot of engineering and other landscaping tasks to get ready for the fall semester. And that's always exciting time of getting back to our big programs and renewal. So I'm sure we'll be there, and with your guidance and leadership and everybody participating somehow, I got my fingers crossed, but I bet it's going to happen.
Yeah, Jay and Dennis, thank you so much, very much, for this time. And I want to just say one more thing as we kind of conclude this, and that is we have a great future ahead at Henry Ford, and I think we just need to emphasize that. It will involve excellent collaboration, excellent communication, transparency. We have certainly, obviously, nothing to hide and a lot of things to gain by listening to carefully and changing. And the higher education is going to change a lot in the next 5 or 6 years across the country. And we want to make sure we're ahead of that curve and that we're participating heavily in positive change here. And we have great people here and terrific students. And one quick thing about transfer. I just met a student the other day that transfer. We gave him a scholarship from another organization, and he's started here. He's going to Harvard. I met another one that was a keynote speaker with me at an event just 2 weeks ago. She graduated from Harvard, and she started here at Henry Ford.
Wow.
So a lot of those kind of things are happening.
Great story.
We'll stay in touch with you. Dr. Stan Jensen, Henry Ford Community College president. Thanks for listening to the new WHFR Journal. Coming up next, Highway 61 with Joanne Kay. This is WHFR, Dearborn.